like to use a New Testament example of what we're speaking about. If you remember when Paul and Barnabas went sailing the first missionary trip, they brought along a young man. His name was Mark, or John Mark, right? And as the travels went deeper and farther away, they first went to Cyprus, which happened to be where Barnabas had come from, so it was a very familiar place. But then as they continued on, things became a little more challenging. There was opposition as they progressed further in their journey. And the scriptures record that John Mark returned home. He didn't stay with Paul and Barnabas. And so we don't know what was going on in the heart of John Mark, but it was a step of unfaithfulness on his part to do that. He was not following the Lord. He was following his fears, and so he went back home. And when Paul and Barnabas wanted to go on the second journey, well, there was a big argument between the two of these godly men. Would we bring John Mark along or not? And Barnabas felt, perhaps because he was related to John Mark and may have known him better than Paul, that we should bring him along. And Paul said, no, he was not faithful. And we need faithful people. And so they had a major, major disagreement. And Paul and Barnabas went separate ways. And we wouldn't know what really took place with John Mark, except for a little verse in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11, when Paul is rehearsing. This is his last letter. And he says, take Mark, that is John Mark, and bring him with thee, for he is profitable to me for the ministry. What a joy John Mark became to Paul. What a joy that John Mark must have experienced in those years after Paul did not want him with him. Now he wants him. Come here, be with me, with Luke and me. I'm all by myself, but I want you because you are a blessing to me. What that must have meant for John Mark. And it has often said that the Gospel of Mark, while John Mark gets the credit by his name being it, it's really the account of Peter that is used through John Mark. And so we see John Mark not only restored to Paul, but perhaps even working with Peter and the Spirit of God using this young man greatly from his restoration. What joy he had, and we can have. And he turned around. He turned his life around, apparently. And these few verses give us the glimpse. And the testimony is a gospel, the Gospel of Mark, where we see a humble servant. We see the Lord presented that way.
I was thinking, as we look at these closing verses and the tremendous millennial blessing that's going to flow, it's a blessing of abundance, an answer to God's own thoughts, because that's what I think we have to bear in mind, because we said that there is no indication of admission, confession of anything, but God comes in because that's who he is. He blesses not because of us. He blesses from his own heart. That's his nature. That's his character. So in this abundance of blessing, when the desert will blossom tremendously, when in that day the very animal kingdom will manifest itself to be in harmony one with another, I was just thinking about the fact that this abundance had been promised to them. It's going to come in millennially, but if you go back to Leviticus 26, is it not there said that if there is no idol in the land, nothing of that sort that is contrary to the character of God, contrary to his holiness, then you will experience this abundance. But because of the intrusion of self and idolatry, that robbed them of that place. So they now have to wait for that day when he will millennially and abundantly prove himself. And this is what we get in the end of this. It's wonderful to see that God never gives up anything that he has in mind. His purposes could not be thwarted by our behavior. His purpose is going to go all the way through in spite of us. So it's not just Israel, but it's the same situation with ourselves when we are not in faithfulness to the truth. He remains faithful, and he's going to see to it that things go all the way through.
These verses, it's not only the house of David, Israel. Not only the Gentiles, because it extends further than that. But the whole creation. The whole creation. There's the mountains and there are the hills. You know, because of the disobedience of one man, it didn't only affect the human race. It affected the whole creation groaneth. It all groans. You read that in Romans chapter 8. But how wonderful that when God takes this matter, he really restores everything pertaining not only people, but also the whole creation. The mountains and the hills and so forth. In other portions, we read about the sun and many other aspects of it. But there's something that in these verses of what God has done, to me, is a very heartwarming thought. He closed the breaches. Because of sin, there is so many breaches between God and man. There's a great gulf. There's a gap. When man fails to stand in the gap, to stand in the breach, Isaiah, I think, was wondering who will be one that will stand in the breach. There was no one found. But how wonderful it is, the Lord who closed these breaches. And dear brethren, I think when we come to these verses, there need to be somehow a response of adoration. That God in his own pleasure has initiated all these things. First, as we have heard, for his own pleasure. And secondly, for the blessing of you and me.
We did not get a chance to read in James 5 in the second study. I'd like to turn there now because it has a connection to this same theme as well that we had on the passage, James 5, verses 14, 15, and 16. I'd like to focus on verse 16, because just as John has been mentioning the wide scope of this restoration, this is another aspect of how wide that scope is here in verse 16. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. And these breaches have a personal character, we would say, in the New Testament application. The context of James is that the one who is sick in verses 14 and 15 is probably sick because of sin, because of failure. And in fact, the implication or the suggestion in verse 16 is that this one who is sick has wronged another. Confess your trespasses to one another. This is the one who has committed sins in verse 15. He may have committed sins as which have led to his sickness, but he is now going to confess his trespasses to one another. And then someone else is going to pray. I picture this as the one who has been wrong, who has done wrong, confesses his trespasses to the other. And then the one who has been wronged is the one who prays for the one who has done wrong. Of course, these are general truths. We should be ready to confess anyway, and we should be ready to pray for one another anyway. But in this context, the picture seems to be that here we are, two of us, and I have wronged you, and so I confess. But then you don't say, well, I'm glad you finally realized, and kick me around a little bit more after I've confessed. No, then there's a response in that two-way street of it's praying for one another. There's confession and there's prayer.
What a beautiful picture of restoring that breach in that relationship. And if there is going to be restoration vertically of our relationship with God, God who can bring that in even when there has not been the full response of the heart, he also wants to work in our hearts to accomplish this restoration as well. Restoration is, it follows this path. It follows the path of recognizing that we have reaped. And it follows the path then of repentance. And after repentance, there is also confession. Repentance, especially emphasized, we heard about the change of direction. It's especially takes place first in the mind. It's a change of mind. And then we are converted and we change our direction. And we confess and we say the same thing as the one who has been wronged. We agree with God that we have wronged him. And in this case, we agree with the other that we have wronged the other. And then there is restoration. There is a fullness of relationship where there was not a relationship before. So this is another aspect of that restoration. Brother Jake.